Now, what are the various WHO criteria laid down for the pathological laboratory? It should provide the best services in a most economic way. One has to see to it that the investigations in the pathological lab are not very, very expensive. Then you have to maintain the quality of all the investigations, because unless the investigations are perfect, it is not going to give a clear idea about the diagnosis of the patient, prognosis of the patient, further line of treatment, and whether it is a case of multidrug resistant or not, whether we have to change the medicine or not. So, maintenance of quality is extremely important. Then direct advantage of close liaison between the physician and the lab personnel should be there, whereby immediately some of the emergency investigations can tell the treating physician to take action. It can be arterial blood gas analysis, it can be electrolyte imbalance, where the patient is in ICU, and unless the doctor knows exactly what the situation now, he cannot treat the patient properly, and if it is not done accurately, promptly, it can lead to death of the patient also. Grouping of laboratories: there can be regional laboratories in case of tertiary care hospitals, there can be intermediate level in case of secondary, and local hospital care level in case of primary care level, where multiple hospitals can club together one laboratory and all of them can take the advantage of that laboratory for multiple primary healthcare centers. Now, let us understand how we have to plan these laboratory services. One has to determine what all services are needed to be provided, whether it is only hematology, blood biochemistry, whether radioisotopes are there, whether it is also helpful for endocrinology, which are very expensive, where around 20 tests are to be done at one go, and whether you are going to that kind of samples or not. So, it all depends on first what all services you want to provide. Based on that, you are supposed to have the right kind of infrastructure and the various kinds of equipment needed for that, and the various kinds of skilled personnel who will be running these tests and giving us the quality reports. So, it determines space requirement for personnel, how many people will be required based on the type of services needed. It will also tell us about what all equipments are needed. Also, it will give us the idea about how many administrative people will be there required to be taking care of all these, so that quality services can be provided. What all technical people and ancillary area is needed for this kind of laboratory services. One has to first determine what is the average volume of work which is expected in this hospital, so that will give us an idea about how many people to be appointed, how many pathologists, how many microbiologists, how many lab technicians and housekeeping people, etc. Determine the functional arrangements, that is location of lobby at the entrance of the department, and centralize the reception area. Reception area, whether it is centralized or whether there are different kinds of receptions for different kinds of lab services, whether for blood biochemistry there is a separate reception, hematology there is a separate reception, radioisotopes there is a separate reception or not. So, one has to take care of all those services which are going to be required, and based on how many number of patients are likely to come for these kinds of services, one can decide about whether we have to centralize the reception and waiting area for that, or whether we can have separate. And one has to always keep provision for future expansion of the area, because day by day more and more investigations are being researched, and more and more investigations are needed by the doctors for taking care of the patients, for diagnosing the patients, for case of to prevent the medical malpractice or negligence in case of Consumer Protection Act. Also, one is now going in for more and more investigations. So, we have to mark future expansion area, and one has to list the articles and special building requirements of various equipments to be installed, and based on the requirement we have to know which equipment, what is the size of that equipment, what are the other requirements for drainage of the fluid, etc. So, all things to be considered, and then find out what, how much area is needed, at which location the ideal equipments can be kept, so that minimum wastage of time is there for the technical people also. List environment requirements in the form of how much lighting is required, ventilation is required, air conditioners are required, and what are the equipments we need to be isolated, then only they can function properly. So one should know each and every criteria while making the laboratory a quality service. Now, what are the various facilities, the number of rooms, size in feet and area in square feet required? For admin area, usually you require one room which should be 12 by 10, that is 120 square feet. Toilet facility, at least one should be there, which should be 8 by 5, that is 40 square feet. Clerk, secretary or record room can be one where it is 12 by 10, that is 120 square feet. Lab area should be 10 by 20 minimum, minimum 200 square feet. Clinical pathology should be again 200. Biochemistry, bacterial, serology 200 square feet. Service area can be 100. Washing and sterilization can be 10 by 10, that is 100. Storage can be patient area where 10 by 10, that is 100, and reception, waiting, etc., where around 100 square feet is needed. So one can see that on an average, for a basic pathological laboratory, requirement can be around, say, 1500 square feet minimum. So what are the various engineering specifications required for developing the laboratory services? Floors should be resilient, moisture free, moisture resistant, so that they do not become slippery for the technicians and the staff while they are walking around. Ventilation should be at least 10 to 15 air changes should be there, so that there is no stinking and fresh air is coming and going. Walls should be durable, they should be hard, at the same time they should be impermeable, because various stains can be there, various chemicals are used in the laboratory. So they should be chemically resistant, and at the same time they should be easily washable, so that any stains that are there, they are easily washed away and the cleanliness, neatness is going to be maintained. Ceiling should be easily clean and disinfected, height 2.5 to 2.8 meter. Door width should be more than 1 meter at least. Lighting, there should be access to natural light as well as 250 to 500 lux light should be there at least. Workbenches should be 80 centimeter above floor level, so that it is convenient for the technicians to work in a proper ergonomic position while standing or sitting. There should be adequate number of refrigerators for the various kinds of reagents, for vaccines, for blood, etc. Communication system should be two-way, and there should be sanitary fitting in the form of wash machines with elbow type, and there should be adequate number of sinks available so that people can wash their hands up to elbow very easily and no need to touch the tap by their fingers. Noise should not be more than 40 to 50 decibel. Air conditioning for auto analyzer should be must. Color should be soothing, white reflected light should be there. Firefighting, you should have fire detection by smoke detectors, etc., and prevention of fire by regularly monitoring the environment, whether it is fireproof or not. Minimum kind of stationary items should be around, minimum kind of wood should be around, so that it is not going to catch fire, and at the same time ignition source should be avoided. Smoking should be totally prevented, prohibited, and even the friction, etc., in the case of electrostatic equipments and all, one should take care of them, and flame proof switches and all should be there. Water supply should be 500 liters per bed per day, which should be sufficient for the laboratory facilities. Electricity should be 3 kV per bed per day, and space should be 5 to 705 square feet per bed. As per WHO, it should be 6 square meters of net floor space per staff of laboratory should be there. Of course, their standards are much higher because they are looking at the international level. Now, what are the various policies and procedures to be followed in case of laboratory? One should have a clear-cut, written-down policy, and everybody should be communicated about this policy. It should be displayed at a prominent place. There should be clear-cut standard operating procedures for all the procedures in the laboratory, whether it is hematology, blood biochemistry, isotopes, ECG, EMG, whatever. So, there should be clear-cut standard operating procedures, and they should be followed scrupulously by each and every staff. Strict control on documentation is very important, because it is these documentation on which the doctors are going to make diagnosis, going to change the treatment. It can make or mar the hospital's reputation in a way. If your documentation is shabby, if it is not clearly seen what exactly is your report, then the modern sophisticated patients of today who are computer savvy, who are going all over the world and seeing the best of the facilities outside, they can immediately sue you with medical negligence and all. So, strict control on documentation, and there should be proper personnel policies. The proper code of conduct should be followed by everybody. Strict recruitment policies should be there. So, only on merit people should be recruited with their right kind of qualification, skills, experience, etc. At the same time, the staff should be trained and retrained frequently, periodically, so that the latest developments that are occurring in this field, they are well versed with that and they do not forget whatever they are supposed to do. So, they should inspire their subordinates further. So, they should be taught about the leadership, they should be taught about the motivation, because unless they are motivated, it's a kind of dry work otherwise they are doing day in and day out. Probably somebody is doing all the time blood test or urine test or stool test, you can understand. Then what will happen? It's a kind of dry work. So, they should be motivated by appreciating them with the efficient way in which they are working, and they may be rotated in the other field also when they are competent enough to look after that, and they should be trained for that. So, job enrichment is very important to enhance their motivation, to make them less complacent with their work, to make them less bored with their work, and to prevent the employee turnover in the laboratory. Information management system should be absolutely in place. There should be clear-cut guidelines about what information to be given, in how many ways, how many reports are to be made, how many copies are to be made, etc. Policy for recording and reporting diseases under surveillance or public health importance also. One should have the clear-cut policy. In case of public health surveillance, they have to give these reports to the semi-government authorities or government authorities if needed. So, there should be clear-cut policy guidelines, and everybody should know about it. And wherever the reporting is to be done, you have to do it. Now, there should be policy for universal precautions to be taken. That means any staff who is involved in the pathological tests to be done, because they are exposed to body fluids and secretions which can be coming from patients suffering from HIV, hepatitis B, or any other infection. So, they have to consider all the body secretions and body fluids to be infected, and hence they have to take all the universal precautions all the time. Even though it's a relative, even though it's a known patient, they have to take universal precautions for each and every kind of patient's body fluid or body secretions they are examining. So, they should be having mask, gloves, gown, goggles to be on so that no splash of any body fluid should be there in their eyes also, and which can lead to nosocomial infections for them. So there should be policy for prevention of all the laboratory hazards. What are the various laboratory hazards that can be there? One is, there can be sharp objects like glass, there can be electricity. So conduction of the electricity, if proper earthing is not there, can be electric shock or electrocution can occur. There can be possibility of infection. Suppose a person is having slight cut and he is exposed to blood of the patient, from the patient who is suffering from hepatitis B, 0.4 ml of blood is enough for him to get that infection, or HIV or any other infection. If there is a pus, that infection can be there, and the organisms can be multi-drug resistant at times. When they are exposed to sputum, which is positive for acid fast bacilli, if they are not having the right kind of mask, they can be exposed to these tubercle bacilli, and if their immunity level is low, they also can get the tuberculosis disease, and it can be multi-drug resistant also. So one has to have the policy for prevention of all kinds of lab hazards that can be likely to be there. The policy for role of lab for disaster management program also should be there, because anytime there can be earthquake, there can be flood, there can be any other major disaster which can occur in the surrounding area, and a flood of patients will come at that time, and to treat them you need lot of backup for the laboratory services also. So you should have the right kind of disaster management program chalked out, mock drills done, and the right kind of communication to be given to the ex-pathology technicians, ex-pathologists, microbiologists, etc. also if needed, so that they can come at the shortest possible time and they can do those investigations. There should be policy for hospital waste management. As we know, since the biomedical waste management rules are there in Maharashtra Pollution Control Board, Gujarat Pollution Control Board, etc., and one has to follow these rules because it's a statutory requirement. So accordingly, one should have the policy for all the hospital waste management to be taken care of. Role of laboratory in prevention and control of nosocomial infection, that is hospital acquired infection, as we know, is a very important aspect in a hospital, because the staff also can suffer from cross infections from the body fluids, or the patients who are coming there to give the blood, urine, stool, sputum, etc., when they are spitting in front of the technician, even they can get this infection. So there should be all the possible precautions to be taken for preventing these kind of nosocomial infections. There should be policy for quality assurance. One has to see to it that the quality assurance is always present. All kinds of SOPs, all kinds of continual improvement, one has to take care of. Proper standardization, calibration of all equipments, the annual maintenance, servicing, etc., should be absolutely thorough, so that the quality assurance is always there. And since pathology is something where day in and day out lot of samples are coming, one can learn lot out of these results and reports and correlate it with the symptoms of the patient and do a lot of research also. What are the problems faced by lab services? If there is an excess load due to the number of patients increasing day by day, as we know, in metropolitan cities, we have got multiple number of vehicular accidents occurring, there are endemic diseases, multiple number of patients are coming, so naturally the load on the laboratory is also increasing day by day. And if the number of staff are not adequate, it can lead to fatigue, it can lead to slightly slip in quality assurance, and then it can affect the quality of the reports, which will in turn affect the quality of the treatment given by the doctors, and ultimately it will mar the image of the hospital in the eyes of the patients and the relatives. So excess workload increased number of patients, and sometimes some of the doctors are unnecessarily telling most of the tests to be done which are not based on the provisional diagnosis of the patient, so that should be avoided. Shortage of trained staff is the major problem in today's world, because people are getting better avenues, better perks and salaries in the Middle East, Australia, New Zealand, US, etc., and hence they are running away from the metropolitan cities of India, and hence there is a shortage of trained, skilled staff. Then idle equipment, at times the equipments, latest equipments are bought where you don't have sufficient number of patients for that coming, so it becomes non-functioning, or there can be no availability of the reagent kits is a problem, whereby some of the chemical reagents which are required to run those tests are not available. And at times some of the doctors have got a habit of sending the routine samples as emergency, thinking that they will get the reports of these samples fast and they can impress upon the patients that they are doing favor to the patients by, you know, giving them the right kind of reports soon and accordingly treating them. So that's not the right way, because ultimately it will burden the laboratory staff and their quality can be compromised at times. Conflicts with clinical department, where adhering time schedule for collection, because there are limited number of staff, they have got some standard operating procedures whereby if they have restricted the collection time as 2 hours or 3 hours, and then the clinical doctors, they will say that the patient has come a bit late, or since they were examining some new cases have come, now they have to send the patient for collection of the blood. So there is going to be clashes in collection, schedule for collection, then receipt of samples. Also there can be clashes because the patient, if he comes late, suppose they have kept the timing of receiving the samples, receiving the reports from 5 to 6, and the patient reaches there at 6:30. He says that there was rain outside, there was traffic and this and that. So there are going to be clashes. Incomplete details about patients in requisition slip. If the requisition slip do not have proper details of the patients, then while reporting it becomes difficult, and then the reports become doubtful, or if the sample collected by the inexperienced staff is there, and if he has not collected sufficient amount of blood or urine or any other fluid, so to do all those tests it was not sufficient enough, in that case, in spite of giving the blood, the patient will not get all the reports, and then he will be frustrated, because ultimately prick is a prick and they expect everything perfect. There can be bottleneck if there is a delay in reports because of the inadequate staff, because of some of the other festival coming, or some epidemic where lot of staff is sick. Then there are various health hazards. It can be injury by needle, because they are going to collect the blood by needle. Then there are glassware used, so there can be breakage of glass, so injury can occur due to that. Then there can be pyogenic infection, because you are using the needles for collecting blood from the patients. Some of them may be having some or the other bacteria on the skin. There can be chances of getting HIV by not proper disposable needles and syringes being used. There can be chance of hepatitis B. There can be accidental chemical burns, because lot of chemicals are used, or at times there can be mild explosion which can occur due to some of the chemicals and gases. There can be procedural lapses by inexperienced staff due to some or the other reason. There can be unlabeled specimen kept because of the multiple number of patients coming at a time, and the pathologist or the lab technician may just forget to put label on one of them, then it becomes difficult whose specimen is that. There can be wrongly labeled. Instead of one patient's name, they have written the name of the other patient on that because of the hurry in which they are working. If the patient has not observed fasting, as we know, for lipid profile 14 hours of fasting is ideal, especially for triglycerides and all. So if the patient comes saying that he has taken a cup of tea in the morning, or He comes in the morning at 8 o'clock for giving the sample, and at night 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock he has completed his dinner. So it becomes difficult to give the right kind of reports. Suppose the lab technician has not used the proper preservative while collecting blood, because there are different preservatives for different kinds of tests. So if he is little inexperienced, it can lead to a problem. And if the reports are dispatched to the wrong wards, in that case it will be lot of delay for the patients to get the report. It will go forth and back, and then the doctors may be agitated by these kind of services. Now let's understand about blood banking. In 1915, an institution was started by Richard Levison of Mount Sinai Hospital, where he started using sodium citrate as an anticoagulant, which means when such anticoagulant is there, the blood is not going to coagulate, and hence it can be preserved for a longer time. And that is how the concept of blood banking started. In India, one of the largest blood bank is there in Ahmedabad. The name of that is Prathama. Now, what are the various criteria for selecting the donor of the blood? The age of the patient or the person who donates blood should be 18 to 60 years. So below 18, who is a minor or who is adolescent, also you are not supposed to collect the blood from him. And above 60 also you should avoid that. Weight should not be less than 45 kg. Temperature, pulse should be normal. That means if a person who comes for donation of blood is suffering from fever at that time, you cannot collect his blood. His blood pressure should be less than 140/90 mmHg. Hemoglobin should not be less than 12.5 gram percent. So many of the women in India are not eligible to donate blood, because many of them are having anemia where their hemoglobin is less than 12.5 gram percent. It should be free from acute. The person who donates blood should be free from acute respiratory illness and free from skin disease at the site of phlebotomy. That means he should not be suffering from even common cold at that time, influenza. At the same time, from the site from where the blood is going to be collected, there should not be any skin infections present. It should be free from any transmissible diseases by blood transfusion. What are the various transmissible diseases by blood transfusion? If we see directly, blood is going from the donor to the recipient. So if a person is suffering from malaria, if a person is suffering from HIV, if a person is suffering from hepatitis B or hepatitis C, if a person is suffering from any of the sexually transmitted diseases in the form of syphilis, etc., all these diseases can be directly transmitted to the recipient, and hence one has to be 100% sure that the blood that you are going to give from the donor to the recipient should be free from all these common diseases which can be transmitted to the recipient. No skin puncture, scars which are indicative of professional blood donor should be present on the skin of this donor. When there are punctures, when there are scars, it means that it is likely that he is a professional donor. So for the sake of money, he is donating blood. So it's likely that he is not taking care of his hygiene. He may be suffering from some disease which he may hide because he wants to earn money, or multiple scars can be there due to a person who is an addict to some of the IV drugs. And naturally, when he is addict, he is less likely to take care of the sterility of the needles that he is using for addiction purpose, and hence he can be suffering from HIV or hepatitis B, etc., or hepatitis C, and hence it is more likely that if you take blood from such a donor, it can have some of the infections which can be transmitted to the recipient. So one should take thorough history of the donor, one should examine the patient, and one has to take care of all these criteria to be fulfilled before collecting the blood. Now, some of the other things are, after the abortion, 6 months a woman cannot donate. After malaria, 1 year he cannot donate. So there are so many other criteria laid down for donating the blood. Now, let us understand the blood component, their shelf life, and the storage temperature at which they are supposed to be stored. Whole blood, the shelf life is only 24 hours, and the storage should be done 20 degrees centigrade to 24 degrees centigrade. RBCs, which are leukocyte depleted, that means with the help of an enzyme, all the leukocytes are removed, or by a special procedure. So it will be 42 days with appropriate additives, and the storage temperature required is 2 to 6 degrees centigrade. Pediatric leukocyte depleted can be kept for 35 days, and 2 degrees centigrade to 6 degrees centigrade can be the storage temperature. Mast leukocyte depleted can be kept for 28 days if resuspended in additive solution. Again, 2 to 6 degrees centigrade is the storage temperature required. Fresh frozen plasma, where it is cryo-depleted plasma or cryo-precipitated, is there, it can be kept for 12 months or a year, and the temperature to be maintained should be 10 to 25 degrees centigrade. At minus 25 degrees centigrade it is. And platelets can be kept only for 5 days, and here the temperature should be 20 to 24 degrees centigrade. As we know, for certain indications, only platelets are required, only fresh frozen plasma can be required as a plasma expander, or in case of malaria, then you have to consider the fragmentation of the blood into its components, whereby you can use this based on this table. Now, what are the risk reduction strategies one can take care of in case of blood transfusion? One has to establish interdisciplinary transfusion committee, which should develop organizational blood transfusion policies and procedures using AABB guidelines that include the use of two patient identifiers. One should have clear cut identification of the patient, and a minimum two patient identifiers should be there to prevent the wrong patient being given the wrong type of blood, to prevent all the transfusion reactions. So there should be two patient identifiers. Use of computerized prescriber order entry will be preventing any illegible handwriting, and then creating some of the other mistakes in identifying the patients and giving the blood. There should be a clear-cut algorithm to identify appropriate transfusions. Rate and volume of transfusion also should be proper. If it is given too fast, then also it can lead to a problem. If it is given too slow, then also it will lead to a problem, because the storage temperature will vary, and hence it won't be that effective at times. You have to review patient's consent to ensure that there is a right for refusal by the patient. You have to tell the patient that these are the problems which can occur due to blood transfusion in his own language, and you are supposed to take the consent of the patient before giving blood, and he has got the right to refuse to be transfused. You have to have the statistical process control to monitor quality of an organization's error. Organization's error can occur at three places. It can be pre-collection of the blood, it can be at the laboratory itself where the testing of the blood is done, and it can be while giving to the recipient. At three places the errors can occur, and one has to have the proper statistical procedure control and see to it that you are monitoring all the quality processes by having a standard operating procedures, by having two patient identifiers, by doubly checking everything, so to prevent organization's error at various levels. You have to consider the barcode or RFID, whereby minimization of the problems will occur in the error free. Transfuse patients within 30 minutes of blood component pickup from the blood bank, so that before you are picking up the blood from the bank, you have to prepare everything as far as the patient is concerned or recipient is concerned. You should have properly done the matching, cross matching. You should have identified the right donor. You should have done all the tests on the blood regarding transmissible infections of HIV, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, malaria, etc., VDRL. You should have kept the site of the vein in which you are going to transfuse to the recipient ready with IV line in, so that there is no wastage of time before the blood, when it is brought from the blood bank to the recipient, and within 30 minutes you are starting that. There should be ongoing structured education for all the staff, all the technicians, so that the latest things can be known, and to prevent all the errors, they are regularly being periodically told about what all things to look into to prevent these kinds of errors.